I'm John Dankosky from Next and the New England News Collaborative. A new podcast out of NHPR called Bear Brook tells the story of four bodies found in Bear Brook State Park and the investigation to find out who they were and who put them there. Joining us today to discuss the case and the new podcast is Jason Moon. He's a reporter for NHPR and the host of Bear Brook. He started by telling us about Bear Brook State Park and the discovery of a barrel there back in 1985.
So Bear Brook State Park is right in the middle of New Hampshire. It's mostly in a town called Allenstown, New Hampshire, about 15 minutes east of Concord. And inside the barrel was a pretty grisly discovery. It was two bodies, two murder victims. One was an adult female estimated to be in her late 20s, and the other was a girl child, maybe 9 or 10 years old. The story of how that barrel was discovered is sort of interesting. There was an initial partial discovery by a group of kids, 11-year-old boys who were playing hide-and-seek out in the woods, came across the barrel, sensed there was something strange about it, but ultimately never looked inside. And so they have strong memories of that because they found out later, of course, that that there were bodies inside. And that second discovery came when a hunter came across the barrel and then called the police. And one of the first, actually the first officer to arrive there was an officer by the name of Ron Montpleasure. He was a police officer in Allenstown for 23 years. And here's what he told me about that day.
The barrel was on the ground and there was a bag. And when I opened the bag, well, the decomposed face was looking right at me. I couldn't believe that there's a decomposed body. Look at me right in the face, staring at me. I can picture it right now. I can picture exactly what that face, how it looked.
It's such a grisly discovery. And I'm wondering, first of all, though, Jason, when these bodies are discovered, does anyone know anything about them, who they are, why they're there?
Absolutely nothing. That was and continues to be the really baffling thing about the case is It's just an utter complete mystery. Still to this day, we really have no idea what their names are, where they were from. There's just so much we don't know, which is pretty unusual when you think about how a murder case is generally solved. Police start with the identity of the victim. Most people are killed by people that they knew, so you can sort of begin with the list of people that the victim knew. But in this case, police couldn't even get started because they could never figure out who those people were.
So then 15 years later, there's a second barrel that's discovered in the state park. Why did it take so long to find this second barrel?
Yeah, that's a difficult question and one that always comes up when you talk about the Bear Brook case. It was in the year 2000, 15 years after the first barrel was discovered, a state trooper detective working the case as a cold case was just familiarizing himself with the details, had never been out to the area where the barrel was found. So he went out there one day, his first trip to the scene, and found a second barrel with two more bodies in it, just 300 feet from where the first barrel was found. You know, it's hard to know for sure why that second barrel wasn't found initially. You know, there's a lot of factors that could have played into it. One was that there was another murder on that same weekend in 1985 when the first barrel was discovered, that went on to become another sort of famous or infamous cold case in New Hampshire history. So police may have been overwhelmed. But also, you know, this was the 1980s in a small town in New Hampshire. There wasn't a lot of precedent for this kind of casework. When I was speaking with Officer Montpleasure, who found the first barrel, he talked to me about the kind of police work they were doing back in the 80s.
We used to call it, let's go fishing. You know, you'd make a motor vehicle stop and you knew somebody that may have known some information about a crime. My line was, you know any good fishing spots? And they knew what I was talking about. We weren't actually going fishing, but, you know, that meant the difference between, I mean, either receiving a warning or receiving a summons or just helping me out. And there was always somebody that knew a good fishing spot, always.
So he's describing the ways in which they did investigations at the time. It doesn't sound as though this was a team of people who were well tasked with investigating the type of murders that we saw there.
Perhaps not. Although, you know, I do think it's worth saying that other investigators over the years took their own cracks at this case and failed just as well. So you know, there's something to be said about the way this case was initially investigated, and there's also a lot to be said about just how baffling and mysterious it has been from the beginning, from 1985.
But you say that this case, it did change the way that murders would be investigated from that time forward. Why is that? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, and that's really what most interests me about the story personally is the way that this case was solved, or I should say partially solved. We still don't know who the victims are, but we do know a lot, including who killed them, or at least police believe they have a really good idea of that. And that was because of this new technique, new forensic science technique that's based on genetic genealogy. And listeners may have heard the news earlier this year about the Golden State Killer arrest in that case. And that's the same technique. The investigators working the Golden State Killer case were inspired by the use of the technique on the Bear Brook case. And so it's a really fascinating and remarkable use of public DNA databases where people have been spitting into tubes and mailing them into companies like 23andMe and Ancestry.com. There is a way for police now, and genealogists have been doing it for a while, to use those databases to find distant relatives of people they are looking to track down the identity of, and then they build family trees, and then they're able to do things that traditional detective techniques that other forensic techniques just haven't been able to do. And so it's really opened up this whole new front for investigations, this new forensic front. Cold cases that police have been frustrated with for decades are now, you know, they now have new hope.
And you talk with a guy named Billy Jensen, a veteran true crime journalist. And what did he tell you about this history?
Yes. So he worked on the book that listeners may know about the Golden State Killer called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. The author, Michelle McNamara, passed away while she was writing it, and he helped her to finish that book. And we got into a discussion about this, and I asked him, you know, what does this mean? What are the implications of this new technique? And then we had this exchange.
I mean, this is the biggest step forward for solving crime since the discovery of DNA itself.
So when we look back, do you think the Allenstown and Golden State Killer cases will be kind of remembered as the moment?
Absolutely. These are the two benchmarks right here. We're going to look back on these 20 years, 30 years from now and say this is where it started.
This is where it started. And it sounds like, Jason, what he's talking about there is the future of law enforcement, how we track down cases like this in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really exciting for a lot of people. I mean, people like Billy Jensen and detectives hope that one day genealogists might even be on staff at police departments to do this kind of work because it can be so powerful. And right now the handful or so of genealogists who can really do this, who are really good at this, are their inboxes are flooded right now with requests from police departments across the country. Already, by my own count, since the Golden State Killer news broke, at least 8 other arrests have been made using this technique, most of them cold cases that have been unsolved for a long time. So it's a really exciting time for people in this world, for true crime journalists and for detectives all across the country, and of course for victims. But there's also this corresponding fear that's really come up on the other side with the use of this new technique and the power that's inherent in it. Some people are raising concerns, privacy concerns to be specific. I spoke with a UNH law professor and a longtime defense attorney, Buzz Scher, and he was a little more skeptical than someone like Billy Jensen. He is not so sure that we know what we're getting into. And here's what he told me.
So if you're one of those people who say, hey, I don't have any problem with that. So fine, let's just take a genetic sample from everyone who's living in the United States today, everyone who's born from now on, everyone who immigrates to this country, and have this huge population-wide genetic database. I'm sure those of you who say there's no problem with this, you have no problem with that. The huge majority of people I've talked to have a big problem with that.
I won't give spoilers here because I'd love people to listen to the rest of the podcast because it's fascinating storytelling. But I guess I should ask for people who haven't been following it very closely. Police know more about who may have committed these murders. And there's a sense in the community that this isn't a Golden State Killer situation where there still could be somebody on the loose who did these things so many years ago.
No, that's important to point out. Today we do, police believe we know who was responsible for the murders, and that person died while serving a prison sentence for a separate murder. So in that sense, there is closure, at least partial, that we know who did it, but we still don't know who the victims are, which is even more unusual than having unidentified victims in a small town like Allenstown. But having unidentified murder victims and essentially solving the case in reverse by finding the killer before you find the identity of the victims is just another way that the case is just so strange.
It is strange. It's fascinating storytelling. You should check out the Bear Brook podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, also at bearbrookpodcast.org. Jason Moon is a reporter for NHPR, host of this brand new podcast. Jason, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations. It's fascinating storytelling.
Thanks for having me.
Listen to Next on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.